Hi, my name is Josh McCarthy, and I want to welcome you to another edition of our Ask the Experts weekend here on 104.5 WOKV. And this show is dedicated to you, the workforce of today and tomorrow. Pete, the job guy Langlois, introduces his listeners to the most innovative companies, and he explores the career journeys behind some of the world's most influential individuals. And this is all done with an honest and oh-so-entertaining filter that is unique to Pete, the job guy Langlois. Take it away, Pete.
Hello, all you hard workers. You did it. You made a great decision today, and that is listening to Hard Worker with Pete the Job Guy. As you heard Josh, our producer, say, this show is dedicated to the workforce of today and tomorrow. And folks, that's dedicated to you, to your friends, your families, all the people you know are likely in the workforce, or they're returning to the workforce, or one day they'll be in the workforce, retiring from the workforce, all these great things. I give tips and advice that will help you to have a more fulfilling career. I give information that might help you land that next step, that your coveted promotion. I help you deal with difficult boss or difficult coworkers. All that stuff is what this show is about. So you made a good decision. You're investing in yourself today. And I don't think you can get a better return on that investment than by listening to this show. And each week I have my weekly recurring folks like Boston Danny. He's been with us now for about 4 years. Boston Danny does some great things. He tells us about the fair city of Boston, the weather. He brags about his sports teams, all kinds of neat. He knows every cobblestone in the city of Boston. And he tells us all about Boston, for me, probably more than anybody else, because it makes me laugh. But what he also does for you folks is he gives you a shout out. So if you have a special someone in your life that maybe they have a birthday, an anniversary, or perhaps they made your workday just a little bit brighter, send me an email about that person. My email address is pete@petethejobguy.com. I'll take that email, I'll give it to Boston Danny, and he will give you a wicked piss a shout out like only Boston Danny can. My other recurring guest on the show, he contributes an episode, I guess we'd call it a segment each week, is Eric Ross, and he does Common Sense Ain't So Common. And he tells us about a workforce related story that I swear will leave you scratching your head. He did what? She did what? He tells us that story. It'll make you laugh a little bit, but he also gives you a little bit of tips and advice to help you not be the person in the story. But the best part of my whole show is I have some of North Florida's most influential people on the show. They tell us a little bit about their career journeys, and they tell us some information that's going to help us all. I swear, every week I learn something from the great guests, and this week is no different. I have a wonderful guest. I've been hunting him down for a little while, and I got him. I finally caught him. He's got a very busy schedule. His dance card is 99% punched all the time, but I'm really, really glad we got him today. All right, folks, but before I introduce our guest, I just want to tell you, I've been here for a long time. I came down from Boston, Massachusetts. The Navy brought me here. A lot of people know my story. And this was in late 1984. And I watched Cowpoke Jacksonville that smelled, man. Back then in the day, it smelled. First thing you would get is a whiff of something so vulgar, and it just assaulted your nostrils when you landed at the airport. And now it might have been those paper mills or whatever it is out there, but they did away with that. Jacksonville smells nice. I remember Jacksonville when Butler Boulevard was a two-lane toll road, okay? One way went east, one way went west. And when we looked over to BTC, you know, this is before Town Center, when we looked over to the left, if we're going east, it was a cow pasture. Just cow pastures. As a matter of fact, the very first building that went up on Gate Parkway down there was Merrill Lynch opened a building, and it was around 1992. I know, because I was one of the first workers there. I wore a hard hat when I went through the door because it wasn't yet finished and completed by the time Merrill had to open. So we wore hard hats when we went in there for training. But I've watched Jacksonville grow. And it's no surprise why Jacksonville is just really like one of the fastest growing cities, best places to live. It's quickly becoming a technology hub, and I'm going to talk more about that. There's reasons why. But if you think about Jacksonville right now, the wonderful port we have, the access from I-95 and I-10 right here at Jacksonville. You don't have to go to some port down south to truck stuff all the way up to get it onto to I-10. You just pull it right into the big, huge port of Jacksonville now. We are the river city by the sea. It's beautiful here. We have miles and miles of pristine beaches. We have the St. John's River. We have seven beautiful bridges in and over our downtown city. This is a beautiful place. Jacksonville does things to entice companies to come and base here. You know, the cost of living's cheaper here. Taxes are a whole lot different. It's easy for me to talk to people about, hey, you want to come to Jacksonville? Well, why? Well, let me tell you why. Let me tell you about the cost of living and how far your money goes and what you can buy for a home down here that you couldn't buy property for where you're from. Jacksonville is a great, great city, and I still see it as an emerging city, even though many would say that thing's emerged a long time ago. I'd say we're just on the cusp. We're going from something that is really, really good to something that is great in our economy, and the jobs, the market here is unreal, folks. And Jacksonville is the place to be. Congratulations to all you people who found out about Jacksonville. You're living right here in North Florida because you're in a good spot, and it's only going to get better. Guys, I told you today I got a great guest, and boy, do I have a great guest. His name is Matthew B. Parks, and let me just tell you a little bit about Matthew. As Senior Director of Information Services for Pace Center for Girls, which is a nationally recognized statewide prevention program for adolescent at-risk girls, Matthew oversees PACE's Information Technology and Business Intelligence Department for PACE's 22 locations across Florida. Matthew is an in-demand, energetic technology presenter. Let me tell you, I told you, his dance card is 99% punched. Okay, this guy is busy, and I love seeing him speak, and he's really good, and he is sought after. Matthew resides in Jacksonville and is the president of the Jacksonville Chamber of Commerce's IT Council. Fantastic. Matthew, welcome to Hard Worker with Pete the Job Guy.
Pete, thank you so much for having me. Always a pleasure to come onto your show.
Yeah, this is the second time you've been on, and it won't be the last because I always learn something from my guests, and I love it when you speak because I learn something.
Well, it's good to hear, and I want to compliment you on your monologue. You brought up something that is reminiscent of being a Jacksonville native myself, being here 23 out of the 50 years I've lived. The late, great Tommy Hazuri was responsible for getting rid of the smell because he got rid of the tolls, and then he put the tax onto the polluters that actually got rid of the smell. So just that was a way for you to actually pay homage to the late, great Tommy Hazuri without even realizing.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. We all owe him a tremendous debt of gratitude. He really did so much for Jacksonville, and he lived a life as a servant. I think he did a tremendous service for the city of Jacksonville. I mentioned Jacksonville is quickly becoming a tech hub. It pops up on so many different articles. Jacksonville, Florida, technology, all these tech companies. Why do you think that is? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I'll tell you, you know, growing up here, one of the things that you realized early on is that Jacksonville was a banking and insurance and logistical hub because of its placement. And when it came to technology, it was in relation to those things. And it kind of still is because fintech, financial technology, is the real, real driver in this area as far as jobs. So you have a lot of industry here based on that. You have like Black Knight and FIS and so many other great fintech companies that are here. SS&C, Advent. So you have some really great technology companies that are based here that really look to expand their footprint. So that's one of the things. The cost of living doesn't hurt, you know?
Yeah.
That doesn't hurt at all. But I think part of it also is that you have a couple of local colleges that are actually taking advantage of that, of the fact that they have have places to send their people locally, right? That a lot of folks that live here understand that cost of living and are working toward trying to ensure that we have talent here. That's one of the things that we work on the IT Council that you mentioned, is trying to support some of that talent, that local talent here, to help it, to cultivate it, to make sure that it stays here and keeps that talent here, because that's the other thing we've suffered from throughout my life, is being able to that we cultivate talent. We have talent here, whether it be entertainment, whether it be technology, whether it be executives, and then they would go off into other communities, whether it be Atlanta or Los Angeles, and they would benefit from that talent, and not the local community that actually incubated that talent.
So we breed them, bring them up, equip them with the skills, and then they move to Atlanta, to a bigger city where they can career track it.
And that's one of the things we work on, is trying to, you know, and I see that the city is actually actively recognizing that, and they're trying to do that. Part of that is trying to make a vibrant downtown. Part of that is trying to bring in other industry leaders, such as Brad and Dunstreet, as they come in and they bring in their prowess here and making Jacksonville a huge destination for technologists to come in. Again, it was Bloomberg that named Jacksonville number 4. For technology migration. So that's a pretty big, we're behind Charlotte and Austin. Pretty big.
Yep.
And CompTIA, they have a Tech Towns listing that they have us listed. We're an honorable mention this year, so we're in the top 25, but we were number 17 last year, which still bodes well nationally. And one of the reasons that we're there is because, you mentioned it, cost of living. The weather's great. Pretty sure the location helps, because, you know, we're the most western point on the East Coast, so that helps us as far as hurricanes and those type of things. So logistically, you can get to anywhere in the world from here. We do have, although it doesn't have international flights, we do have an international airport. We have the port down with the for shipping, and you know, the roads with I-10 and 95. So you have a major thoroughfares. You also have the railroad. So there's a lot to in here that comes in. But there are a lot of places that decided to drop anchor here also, and decided they wanted to be build Jacksonville. Some long times, like, you know, your Southern Groceries with Winn-Dixie, some of the others like CSX. So you have some of those large logistical powerhouses that are out there that drew others because of the infrastructure that they built. Amazon has, 4 locations here?
Amazing.
You have Wayfair that has a huge location here.
Now, who'd have thought, right?
Yeah.
Not too terribly long ago, Jacksonville had the Navy and some logistics, like you mentioned, and banking and financial institutions, insurance. But now it's really diversified, and I love the fact that there isn't a company out there that isn't immersed in technology. It's the main driver, the component, the glue of just about everything that we do now. And I like to see the Jacksonville community from a technology standpoint. You have all these big enterprise companies and some that you mentioned, but there's a lot of sexy little startups and new somebody's. They're not afraid here in Jacksonville. It seems to inspire that creativity to jump out there. I have a good idea. I'm going to hang the shingle. I'm going to surround myself with hardworking, like-minded people that are all rowing in the same direction. See a lot of opportunity. What types of roles are you seeing right now in Jacksonville and maybe upcoming from a technology standpoint?
Well, you mentioned great. And one of the other great places where you see startups besides fintech would be in the analytics space. That's a huge growing market here in Jacksonville. You have a friend of mine, Scott Carnes, and his company over there, Duos Technologies, where they created some really, really fascinating technology. They have a great demonstration of them being able to inspect a train while it's moving via cameras, high-speed cameras. It's mind-blowing. And then they have partnered with some of the local IT companies that actually are logistics and technology companies that help them to actually take that data and be able to drive that data back so that the customer, CSX in this case, can inspect their train safely, but they can do so in a way that doesn't impede or impact their ability to move goods and services. That's amazing to me. Fortuna, right? Another great company here.
What a great story that is.
And that is a wonderful story. But the way that they're changing healthcare by basically putting workflows in place and, the way that they were able to help companies pivot during COVID into virtual waiting rooms and those type of things. So there's some great companies that are here. And part of that is that startup piece is being able to get out and have a talent that's at your disposal that's able to really help you get to that next level. One of those last things is that, I think it's estimated we have, 18,000 technical jobs across the entire genre that are opening or have opened in Jacksonville. One of the things we have to work on is pay. Part of that is, we're about 19,000 under the national average, but for technologists. But still, because of that, though, we've taken Jacksonville's median income, which when I was a kid was in the 40s, to almost $60,000 median income. Yeah, because the average income being about almost $80,000 for a technology worker here. So as that influx of jobs and influx of technology comes in, it's one of those things where, the tide raises all boats.
Right.
So it's really beneficial for us to continue to support technology here. One of the other things, opportunities here in Jacksonville would be looking for more of those venture capitalists that can actually help to inject some of that cash into some of those startups so that they will have that safety net to get started and to help the city grow as they grow their business.
Right. I just love seeing it. And I've seen and talk to folks every day. I have conversations. I run a staffing agency. So one thing that you just said that I hear day in and day out are the dollars are a little softer here in Jacksonville because, here, we're competing against not just each other to get the best talent. Like everybody wants to get the best talent. And let's say I'm getting a data and analytics analyst or something. And I want to get the best. So I'm competing against the other people in my, in Jacksonville that want to get them. But now there's all these remote jobs in cities where the dollars are a little more plentiful and they spend more money. So I help, my clients say, hey, we've got to, if you really want, sometimes we got to make a higher investment. And in turn, what that does is I love the way you just said it. It drives the mean income up because we have to be competitive here for the best folks. It's just part of the whole thing.
It also helps with the amenities, too. So some of the amenities that you may when I was younger, when you were here, when you were moving from Boston down here, we would avoid a lot of the nicer restaurants and a lot of the nicer hotels and those type of things. But as the median income comes in, you start to see that investment where people take a risk. They take a chance. You take a look at, Carter, who built the town center. He's from Jacksonville, but he built huge malls like the Mall of Georgia and those type of things up everywhere else. But he didn't build anything in his hometown because it wasn't worth it to him, right? And so finally, it was a place where, okay, let's see what this burgeoning market is. So now you have a Louis Vuitton store, something that blew my head that I just had to go to Orlando to just look at those type of things or go down to Miami. But now you have one. And as you bring in more of that high-end retail, the folks in Ponte Vedra no longer have to take their helicopters and private jets. They can just drive right up JTB, right?
Yeah, and it all changed. And like they say, it was life BTC and then before the town center and then after because it was amazing. It kind of put us on the map and then amazingly, look at all the condos that came up afterwards. All this
office buildings
it's
all
amazing.
Those things, yeah.
And with it comes jobs, comes people, and it is exciting. I want to talk about the two major technology gaps in the U.S. One is of workers and one is a supply chain. So how do you think we can close the gap?
One of the things that I think we need to do to close that gap is we have to realize that traditional college may not be the way to supply that gap. And as we look at the way that, and they were just, as you probably saw that from your field, where there was a cybersecurity conference at the White House. And one of the things that they mentioned is that we have more jobs than we can fill. You look at, we talked about data analysts. There are 4,000 open data analyst jobs in the state of Florida that are looking to be filled. But that 4-year stream is really, really tightening up up because the number of jobs keep exploding. You know, 2015, 2016, cybersecurity was a thing. Now it's a thing, right? Yeah. And so because of that, you have more need for that to protect national interests, to protect business interests. So boot camps, I think, is probably going to be the way moving forward, is to streamline some of the processes of getting people through school, whether it be in the colleges, because like around the corner, UNF, they have a great boot camp that's coming up, several. They have a data analyst and they have a cybersecurity. You have Jackson Coding Academy, which has a great coding boot camp that's nationally recognized. So those, I think, will be some of the way we can fill that. But the other thing is starting early. We wait too late to bring a lot of these children in, these kids into the technology market, and then we don't support them in the local schools through that process. Whereas you go to Seattle, you go to San Francisco, you know there's schools that are basically feeders for that particular premise.
Wow, wow. I mean, it's good that now Jacksonville is really kind of rounding a curve here and recognizing that. Let's talk about right now diversity in technology. Why is it important, and what can we do to increase diversity in technology?
Well, I'll take the second question first. So what we can do is, I think it's the same premise that we just talked about, right? Is mm-hmm. trying to find ways to support technology people as they stay in the field. So mm-hmm. going back to the college model, and I've talked to different provosts and such at different universities, and they say the same thing, that you don't have a problem with people going into technology in college. What you have a problem is people coming out mm-hmm. with technology in college. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of barriers of entry. One of my best friends, his son just dropped technology or dropped cybersecurity because of the math requirement that really isn't necessary for what he wants to do. But it's something that's there as a gatekeeper that we put in place to try to keep numbers at a certain level. Those things discourage now a diverse candidate from going into the field. So it's really, we're shooting ourselves in the foot. So I think that's part of it. The other reason is, again, if you see some of the stories, you had the story up in Detroit, you had the story also in the Midwest with the gentlemen that were both in Detroit, has had this happen twice now. But you've had two black men who were misidentified by the software. And the reason that that happens is that you have an implicit bias on the other side. Would take race aside, that if the majority of the folks that design the software are of a certain persuasion, that they're going to design software that is built for them as opposed to others. It's the same reason that you go to an airport and there's a thing, there's a video called "Is the Soap Dispenser at Facebook Racist?" You can look this up. And what happens is you have a Caucasian gentleman and a darker complected gentleman go into the men's room. One sticks his hand under the soap dispenser, it dispenses. The black gentleman sticks his hand under the soap dispenser, it doesn't. He takes a white piece of paper and puts it under there, and it dispenses. And what that means is that it's not calibrated for all skin tones. And but the designers may not have been thinking of that. They say, oh, look, it works. And they walked away, put it on the shelf, and it works. So we need to have that diversity of thought, diversity of experience, diversity in general, whether it be gender or race, those type in culture, those things really, really help to make the software, to make the hardware better so that we all can enjoy the experience as opposed to having an inconvenient happenstance in the bathroom because I'm there longer than I should be because I can't get the soap to dispense.
Wow.
Particularly during COVID.
Wow. It's amazing. I mean, this diversity is incredibly important in technology. And the two examples, really, the soap dispenser and the facial recognition software, those are great examples of why diversity is critical.
You have a 50% chance of being misidentified the darker you are, basically. And it goes by tone going down. So a black person has a 50% or higher than 50% chance of being misidentified by a facial recognition software. That is the U.S. Justice Department's own numbers that tell you this. They have access to 630 million faces that they have access to. And of those, it consistently happens. And if you add gender to that, black women, Indian women, they have an almost 80% chance of being misidentified because of things like hairstyle, because of things like makeup and those type of things. So it's really something that we need to have more people behind the desk working on those things, designing it, so that we can have a better experience with the software that we're going to be living with for the rest of our lives.
Outstanding. You know, we have to take a break. The music's telling us right now that we have to take the bottom of the hour break. Please stay with us for the second half of Hard Worker with Pete the Job Guy.
You're listening to Hard Worker with Pete the Job Guy and 1.5 WKV.
All you hard workers. Wow. Did you hear that little intro? That was Josh's daughter, Adeline, welcoming us back from the break. And welcome back. You're listening to It's the absolute cutest. I love it. Guys, my guest today is Matthew B. Parks, and he is the Senior Director of Information Services for Pace Center for Girls. I'm learning a whole lot about technology. I'm learning about roles and responsibilities, diversity, and how Jacksonville is growing and changing to really keep the talent here. We develop it. Let's keep it here, Jacksonville, and let's develop a career paths for these technologists to stay right here in the fair city of Jacksonville. Matthew, there's a kind of this adage in technology. I've heard it before. You know, if I don't want to get promoted to IT manager, I want to keep my skills sharp. If I'm a leader, I develop these softer skills and I'm not as into the, you know, roll up my sleeves. Can you manage a team and still stay razor sharp from a technologist standpoint?
Short answer is no. Mm. No, it's a completely different skill set that mm-hmm. you have to cultivate. Mm-hmm. There's that people skill set that you have to cultivate. Mm-hmm. And it does happen. And I actually do a presentation on that mm-hmm. where I talk to emerging leaders that are moving into the IT space. You got to remember something, that IT is still the most blue collar of the white collar jobs. Mm-hmm. So there isn't that direct path as there is for an accountant and those type of things that work with the business services piece that can then transition from what they learn or are mentored through into a leadership position, right? Mm-hmm. In IT, you know, we're the people that everybody wants to stay away unless something happens, right? So True. We're the ninjas, we come in your office, you notice your computer's working, you leave type of thing.
Right.
But because of that, the downfall is that we don't necessarily get that day-to-day experience working on the business cases. So the first thing I tell people is that, yeah, that is a sacrifice. It is something. Can I jump in and still solve problems? Can I still do my job? Can I still do that job? Absolutely, I could. But I'm not as sharp, so I'm not as fast as I used to be. So it does take me a little bit longer. But that's no longer my role either. And I really enjoy being able to guide a team through that type of premise so that they're able to work through that. Yes, but it's no, you can't do it. I'm sorry to disappoint. So, yeah. But we do need more sharpened technology leaders because, again, it's about on the other side of it, I will advise you if you are young and you're looking to come into the industry. There's a phrase that I learned a long time ago. If you stay ready, you ain't got to get ready.
Mm, that's very good. I always like tell folks it's important to understand the business behind the business. Like what's the business impact? Who are all the stakeholders? And, you know, really understanding not just silo, I understand this technology, but I need to understand the business and the flow of money through an organization. If you're going to be a leader, especially to really bring value to your team and, and just function well as an IT manager. One of the things I want to talk about, too, is within IT networking, like having a network of professionals, how important is that? I know, you know, you're a member of at least one or two. You speak at a lot of different conferences. But how important is it to have that network? And maybe give us an example of one you're kind of partial to.
I'll tell you, it is huge. And it's something where I was adverse to because I'm a natural introvert. If you will, I mean, I know everybody has introvert and extrovert qualities, but I'm a natural introvert. So for me, it's not natural for me to jump in and just, you know, walk in, hey, Pete, what's going on type of thing. That's mm-hmm. not me. I'm not that person. But I have found that having that network of people is really, really beneficial. through my career. I mean, I would not, if I wasn't, if I hadn't started networking, I wouldn't have started teaching IT. I would not have started presenting IT, because those opportunities came to me because I was networking with people that turned out, they were the speakers at these conferences that I was at. And as we talked and as we started to talk shop, you know, they became interested in, who is this guy? What is he talking about? Those type of things. And as they started to listen, that sounds like a great talk. You ought to, you know, put in for a talk. So that's how I got into that. And being having to sharpen my razor at that level actually is what helped me to become sharper at my job. So it was a cyclical thing that has been beneficial to me. So going back to your earlier question, you do lose some of that sharpness, but the research is honed to a point to where it's razor sharp.
Mm-hmm.
So there are times when, you know, the job, they call me the man on the mountain, and I thought it was because of the gray, but the point is that a lot of times if something happens, you know, some of the younger techs will come in the office and they ask me, hey, have you seen this? Have you seen that? And I throw out what I see and what I think is there based on having a really intimate knowledge of what's going on and keeping my finger on that pulse.
Right.
That's one thing, again, even though you're not doing the day-to-day, you really, as an IT leader, COVID, if it didn't teach anybody anything, is that we have to make sure that we're looking not just down the road. We have to look around that corner. Because if you're not prepared, when that happened, businesses went under because they didn't know how to pivot. And we really, really have to be able to do that. So networking has helped. Networking helped through that, where, you know, when I needed support, I could reach out to my network of fellow technology people, or I could reach out to my job fillers like yourself, mm-hmm. and say, hey, I need to have this. I need this person. I need this resource. And it really, really benefits you. So Jacksonville IT Council is one. I would recommend that we are a council of the chamber. We actually had our first, well, we have our meetings on the last Tuesday of the month. So today we had a meeting this morning over at the FSEJ Technology Campus. That's one that I would recommend here locally. There are a couple of other user groups and such that are also helpful. And having that community, because, again, the number one reason that's quoted, whether it be a diversity or just a regular person in IT, for why they left the field is lack of support. Because there are so few of us that there's this inbred competition that goes on to where people don't feel like, I don't need to help this person because, you know, there's not enough, in their mind, there's not enough money for all of us when we can all eat.
Right.
Right. But that's the issue, is that we also have to get over that piece too, where we also have to realize that knowledge is not ours exclusively, that we need to make sure that we're expanding that knowledge to help that understanding so that we can proliferate everybody and bring everybody to the table.
Ah, that is outstanding information. Good advice. You know, you kind of spoke a little bit about the pandemic, but I mean, that flipped everything on its ear. You know, we learned a lot from 2020, I would have to say. What are some of the things that you've learned, and what are some of the challenges that you've seen come out of 2020 and the pandemic?
I'll tell you, just like the quote I said earlier, if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. I mean, we were really, really, being a nonprofit, one of the things that we really are challenged to do is to stay up to date, because for us, technology is a force multiplier. So where we are maybe smaller than some shops, or we may not have the resources of some other places or whatever, although we're doing pretty good, one of the issues is technology allows us to stretch that dollar and to make our operations more productive and more efficient. So what that does for me is that means that, you know, a lot of my job is researching what's the next thing. We're here, what comes after this? So we had already deployed, in this instance, Teams just before the pandemic, which was lucky. And then because of that, that allowed us to bring our students online so that we can educate them using the same platform that the many of the schools were using throughout the state. So those are the things that really it taught me. The challenges are still the challenges, right? Is that, you know, we spend a lot of time as technology folks, technology leaders, thinking about security. And we talked about it earlier, but, you know, there's two things there. Number one, the insider threat, and I don't mean that to be salacious, but the insider threat is still 90% of the problem, meaning that most threats, whether it be, you know, the pipeline hack, or it was the meatpacking hack that happened, two large hacks, $1 billion of lost revenue and production, those still were insider hacks where they hacked the human, social engineering, So really fortifying your human firewall, training your employees, testing them regularly so they know what the threats look like, having good email filters and stuff like that isn't enough, because things will still get through. And as they get through, you need to make sure your people are suspicious, that they trust no one. They have a zero trust inside of them. So that's the first thing there. Second, as we look through that, we typically build our technology in the old medieval castle way, right? Mm-hmm. Where we put the thing at the middle, and then we build a wall around it, then we build a moat around that, and then we build another wall. I mean, and we think insecurity in layers type of thing, but that's what we do. Mm-hmm. Well, what happens when the people go home to the villages? They're outside the wall, so we can't protect them. And maybe 10% of the people that work in our places actually have a security mindset at home. They think about it when they come to work because we force them to. When they go home, how secure is that network? You know, is the neighbor next door, you know, pilfering their bandwidth next door? So those are concerns that are there that are challenging for us. I tell you, the other challenge, particularly where I am in our place, is it wasn't just the students. We also had, you know, adults that had issues that they didn't have enough bandwidth to be able to do a video call. We had students that couldn't successfully do video calls, and you had school districts that had requirements that they had to have their camera on, and that was just advantageous. It was adverse to them that they couldn't actually make that happen. So that's one of the other challenges, too, is that, and it's not even from an expense perspective. We have rural areas and some urban areas. Both of those places, people like to put despair them against each other, but those areas are actually more in common than you would think. Right. And particularly when it comes to resources that they're overlooked. I mean, you talk about rural areas being flyover country, and well, it's drive pass country when you talk about urban areas, the same thing. So in those areas, you look at it at the maps, and you see that there is a huge disparity in the amount of internet availability that's there. And because of that, even if I did make enough money to be able to afford a low end plan that would get my child or get myself where I could work, they're in there. So then what do I do? Yeah. I wind up having to get a more expensive plan, which is typically a wireless plan, mm-hmm. whether it be through my local carrier or through satellite. And then now I'm back in the same situation as someone else who couldn't afford the bandwidth in the second place.
Right. Yeah, let me ask you one final question here. With all these changes, increased demand, you're running an IT department. That has to have an impact on your players, your people. They're working harder. They're working differently. How do you maintain the mental health of your employees? What are some things that you do?
I tell you, one of the things we did when we were really hardcore in the pandemic is that we did a team happy hour. Mm-hmm. And in the happy hour, we had a 30-second work rule. You couldn't talk about work more than 30 seconds. So we actually just talked to each other. We couldn't really commune, per se, at the time. Mm-hmm. But we actually made sure that we kept in touch with each other. We talked to each other. And because of that, we all kind of, I can say for myself, kind of started to dip into other people's hobbies. So, you know, I started growing vegetables and gardening because I have a teammate who does that. So we talked about, you know, kitchen designs and stuff like that, where people were redoing their kitchens. So that was another topic that we did. It was informal. We didn't have anything per se, but it was every Friday at 5 o'clock. And we just would go in and we'd talk for an hour. And the attendance was very well, surprisingly. So that was one thing. Number two, every week I encourage in my weekly meeting, you know, for my team to come and talk to me. And I mean it. I'm honest about that. Mm-hmm. If you're having those issues, if you're having a problem dealing with something like that, then don't be ashamed. And the next piece there is that I have a mostly male team, so I'm going to skew it that way. And the reason that I say that is that I also talk about mental health not being macho. Mm-hmm. Let's get past that. You know, vulnerability is macho. Yeah. That's manly, right. Is being able to walk past that issue that you're having and ask for help, as opposed to, that's why we die earlier, right? Is because we are trying to hold all this stuff in to be tough guy. And then, yeah, you were tough, but you're dead.
Yeah.
And so
that's a good point.
Being able to walk through those pieces. And if you can't deal with it yourself, find somebody to talk to, reach out to somebody. Most jobs now have that benefit inside of the benefits, and you pay for that in your benefits. It comes out of your check. Utilize it. Make sure that you're getting the help that you need also. And then, again, find some time make sure you carving out some time outside of work, whether it be during the day that you make sure that I make sure that my team takes their lunch break. Whatever time that is, you're going to take that hour to get away from whatever you're doing so that you can do that and also take some time outside of work when you can.
Outstanding. Those are words of wisdom. Matthew, I'm so glad you came back to the show once again. You shared some great information. It's your second time on. It won't be your last because we have a whole bunch more to talk about. A lot of directions we can go in. This is Matthew B. Parks, folks. He is the Senior Director of Information Services at Pace Center for Girls. Thank you for being on Hard Worker with Pete the Job Guy today.
You know, again, anytime, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
And now, this next segment of the show is called Common Sense Ain't So Common with our weekly contributor, Eric Ross.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, employees, bosses, and leaders, and all hard workers tuned in today. Eric Ross here with 212 Benefits and fellow member of the Hardworking Tribe, bringing you this week's segment of Common Sense Ain't So Common, where we share real-life professional stories about questionable bosses and employees that will leave you scratching your head and thinking, shoot, maybe my job isn't that bad. But first, some cringeworthy business dad jokes to make me feel incredibly awkward for reading these over the airwaves. What did the boss accuse the accountant of when the latter dropped a brownie on the paperwork? Fudging the numbers, of course. And I'll give it a 3. Why do businesses that sell stereos need constant maintenance? Because they keep jamming. God, I'm not laughing because these are funny. Who knew the chocolate business had so many Twix up their sleeves? Jeez, I really admired myself working at a paperless company, but then I went to the restroom. Whew. This week's best for all you Star Wars nerds out there like myself, why did Yoda succeed at marketing? By making good use of the sales force. Oh man, these are cringeworthy. Okay, hopefully our producer behind the scenes, Josh McCarthy, can edit some crickets, booze on top of those jokes, but that is very uncomfortable for me, which makes me kind of enjoy it a little bit. All right, today's segment of Common Sense Ain't So Common, we're going to tell a little story about a coworker named Not So Teamwork Terry. I imagine most of you have worked with Terry or two during your professional journey and maybe currently, but Not So Teamwork Terry is a me guy, not a we guy. What does that mean? Terry is so concerned with climbing the corporate ladder, winning every cheap glass sales plaque for his wall, that he likely wouldn't throw you a life preserver if you were drowning. Metaphorically, of course. Hopefully, Terry isn't that diabolical. Terry has had multiple opportunities to help his peers close a deal, or make a hire, or develop a coworker's career, or insert any team activity you can imagine. And somehow, he still can't grasp the long-term vision of the benefits of working together. Again, Terry is a me guy, not a we guy. Instead of helping a coworker win a sale and splitting the commission, he tried to backdoor the deal by himself and lost the business entirely. Instead of helping his coworker place a new hire as a team, he wanted full credit for the placement. The candidate was so frustrated with the hiring process taking so long, because of Not So Teamwork Terry, she took a job elsewhere. And my least favorite is Terry's inability to collaborate with team members to work on a project or sale that would be a win for all involved parties. Instead of looking at the collective victory and still a win for him, he only looks at the individual win for himself. Something about those cheap plaques on your wall sometimes, I don't know how I feel about it. Anyways, don't be Not So Teamwork Terry. Don't be a me person. Be a we person. Remember, a rising tide lifts all ships. And if you want to go fast, go at it alone. If you want to go far, you must go together. 3 quick hits for all you listeners. First, congratulations to Jacksonville Jaguar return man Jamal Agnew. And from now on, I will refer to him as House Call Jamal for a 109-yard return last weekend against the Arizona Cardinals. Without question, the most exciting play I have seen in that stadium in my entire life. Second, if you have any questions about your employee benefits, 212 Benefits, where I work, is only a phone call, text, or email away. We'd love to help you out. Third, most important, congratulations, Mr. Job Guy. I'm talking to you, Pete. Saw you last Friday at Providence homecoming game, looking so proud as a father. You should be. Until next week, thank you for listening to Common Sense Ain't So Common.
All right, another gem from the world-famous Eric Ross. And this next part of the show is where we get our Boston update from Boston Danny. And Boston Danny will tell us all about the fair city of Boston. He'll brag about his sports teams, but he does something for you folks. He does shout-outs to your special someone. So if you know somebody that has a birthday, an anniversary, or maybe they just made your workday a little bit brighter and you'd like to recognize them for that, send me an email. Send that email to Pete@PeteTheJobGuy.com. I'll give that to Danny, and Boston Danny will give you a wicked pissa shout out like only Boston Danny can. With no further ado, let's get this week's Boston update from Boston Danny.
Hello, Jacksonville. Danny here with your northern update. Well, the weather up here has been spectacular. It's just like I told you. We're going to ride out this Indian summer till it goes in. Perfect working weather. You know, sleep with your windows open at night. Low humidity. It's just worked out so good for us. Soon the leaves will be changing, and we know the cold's coming, so we're prepared for it. We're going to get into it. So, you know, the big thing on the sports thing is, you know, Tom Brady in Tampa Bay coming up to play in Gillette Stadium the first time. Everyone's all over it, but, you know, it'll be a good time. You can't ever count Tom out. He's just such a warrior. But, you know, we'll welcome him, you know, like a hometown hero that he is, and then we're just going to treat him like any other player. So watch out for that. My Red Sox, they had a little hiccup last week going against the Yankees, but, you know, we'll see what happens. We'll go into it. And the great thing is the Bruins have dropped the puck, and, you know, the preseason started, so keep your eye on our Boston Bruins. They're going to be doing it what it is, and pretty soon the Celtics will be bouncing it on the parquet soon enough, so you'll be hearing about them from me. But, you know, let me tell you, you know, something about Boston again. You know, I love talking about it. So, you know, we had this big highway project up here a few years ago. They called it the Big Dig. We stuck all the elevated roads that we had in Boston, we put them down underneath, and we put them from tunnel. And we actually added a third tunnel that goes underneath Boston Harbor, heads over to East Boston, picks up Logan Airport. And, you know, so they did the tunnel. It was quite a feat. They named it after former Boston Red Sox baseball legend and U.S. Marine Corps Air Corps veteran Ted Ballgame Williams. So that's pretty good. But the big thing about the Ted Williams Tunnel is it's the deepest tunnel in America, you know, that you can drive under. It's almost 100 feet underground, goes underneath the harbor. It's 8,448 feet long, and 3,960 of it is underwater. And it's a toll road, so we get it in there. But, you know, that's something. Deepest tunnel. It's right here in Boston, folks. You can always ride through it coming from the airport, getting downtown. So I got your shout-outs, folks. You know, I like to mangle you up. Get them in. Get them into the website. We'll say them on air. We'll give you anything. Birthdays, everything. So I want to wish wicked pisser birthdays to Lindsay Morgan and Bob Borelli Hopkins, Vince Panzano, and that comes from his entire crew, Kim Sessions, Sean Eaton, Jamie Michaud, and Mark Robles. You guys have a wicked pisser birthday. And also, I want to give a great congratulations to our own Lindy Langlois. She made the homecoming court at school for the dance. So congratulations, Lindy. Way to go. Brothers and sisters in Jacksonville, enjoy your Sunday. I'll be in touch. Remember your first responders, your nurses, your doctors, and, you know, all our military, retired and active. All right, Pete, I'll talk to you next week.
Oh, another great one from Boston Danny. We had a lot of birthdays this week, folks. Remember, if you have a birthday or an anniversary for anybody you'd like to have a shout-out done for, just send me an email message, Pete@PeteTheJobGuy.com. My guest today was Matthew B. Parks. He is the Senior Director of Information Services at Pace Center for Girls. He is a wealth of information, and he will be back on the show, folks. Well, guess what? You did it. You just listened to Hard Worker with Pete the Job Guy. I hope you had a great, great day, and I hope it continues to be a super good week for you, folks. You did it! Have a great week.